No problem. Okay, let's try that again. I wanted to thank all of you for coming. I want to thank Elon and Jay Kelman and Torin Motion for giving us the opportunity to learn together. I wanted to start out saying this is not a review course. I hope that's okay with everybody. I am presuming a basic knowledge of the laws of family purity, of Tarat HaMishpacha. If that's not the case, let me know when we go around and introduce, and we'll bring you up to speed for this class, and then we'll give you homework for the next one. Okay? So what is the class? I'm hoping to use the sources to get a greater understanding and appreciation for the development of the halachas, of the mainstream practice that we do today. So each week we're going to cover a different topic. Today I started out with a not very philosophical one, and I'm going to try and do a balance of the touchy-feely and the not touchy-feely, but no matter what it is, we're going to be looking at the sources. I think it's very important for us to approach the sources themselves. I would love it if we all brought a stack of books, but that's asking a bit much. So I did bring source sheets, and that'll have to do. I feel it's very, very important to see the development of the halacha through the sources and to get an appreciation for at least a taste for the way halacha works. And the way Chazal think. I will present some opinions that go both ways, but I really am trying to focus it on the development of the normative halacha that we follow today, rather than all the options that are out there, while still trying to maintain the impression that there are a lot of things going on, and there are a lot of ways that the halacha could have gone. And that's why, in each case, maybe he paskins this way, maybe he paskins that way, right? So depending on who you follow. But I'm trying to get a mainstream idea. Okay, I think that through this we are going to gain ownership a little bit of the halacha, and I hope that will lead to greater satisfaction in observance, greater satisfaction in our attitudes. If there's a question, please feel free to interrupt me. If there's something that you didn't understand, you don't know where we are, what page we're on, great. If there's something more philosophical, see if you can hold it in to the end. This week, we are going to talk about ketamim. Before we get started, I want to just get an idea. If we could just go around, get names, and where did you get your Jewish education? You could start. And post high school.
And post high school, yes.
A year in yeshiva.
That was a while ago.
Rahab Bremer, Naomi's sister in law. And I went to Ofana and Midrash Abba for a little bit.
I'm Chaviva, Naomi's sister in law. And I went to Ofana and to Nicola.
I'm Laura, I went to
Sassy,
and I went to
I'm Bill.
All these things I never knew.
And I'm Sheila Hecker, and over the last 20 years, most of what I've learned has been through Aish, plus many other courses.
Right. So everybody sounds pretty current, right? All right, great. So today, we are going to address the question. Everybody has the source sheets? Great. I tried to pick something that it comes up a lot, which is, why isn't it cheating, right? So if I don't look at my toilet paper, and I wear colored underwear, and I don't know if I'm spotting, so why isn't that cheating? Okay, we're going to talk about that. So let's get started. What, in the first place, would render a woman anita? Okay, doraisa, the Torah law. Let's start with that. That's on page 1 at the top. It's from Vayikra, Perek Tet Vav, Pasuk Yud Tet. I'll start off, break the ice a little, then I might torment you a little. V'isha ki tiyeh zava, and if a woman has a flow, if a woman experiences a flow, dam yeh zava, it's a flow of blood, its blood which is flowing, bivsara, in her flesh, shivat yamim tiyeh benidata, 7 days shall she be in her menstrual separation, v'chol anogeh ba itmada erev, and anyone who touches her will be tamei, ritually impure, until evening. Now, I'm really going to try, bless you, to stick with the words ritually impure, tahor, tamei, rather than clean or unclean. I find those have a lot of nuances and connotations which are not related to tahor and tamei, not related to halacha, and get in the way a little bit. So, Torah law, a woman who's bleeding, this is the pasuk that it's all based on, woman is bleeding, 7 days of nida. Okay? Another day, we can talk, oh, the last thing was, at the end of the class, if you're interested, if you don't mind, to write down anything that you're interested in hearing about. I've got some plans, but if there's something specific you wanted to ask or a topic that you want to hear about, please give it to me in writing and I will do my best to incorporate it. Okay? Sorry. Let's get back to this. Okay. All right. We'll go to the next source, the Gemara, in Nida, Dafnan Zayin Amud Beis. And we're talking about, it's going to refer back to this original pasuk. And how do Chazal interpret this pasuk? This pasuk, by the way, has almost every word, okay, is we learn through, there are different ways that we learn from a pasuk. There are those, Rabbi Ishmael, right, had those 13 ways or whatever, it's called the Chomer and Gzera Shava. There are official ways that Chazal can darshan a pasuk. And almost every word in this pasuk, which is the source for basically, Tarsa Mishpacha has a limud on it, has something learned from it. So let's see in the Gemara what's relevant to us. Amar Shmuel, Shmuel says, Badka karka olam. If a woman examined the ground, v'yashva aleh, and then she sits down, umatz adam, when she gets up, she finds there was blood underneath her, tehora. She's pure, she's ritually pure. Shenemar, why? How do we know that? That because it says in the pasuk, "Biv sara." That's the pasuk we just read. In her flesh, ad shetargish biv sara. She has to feel it in her flesh. She has to feel the discharge before she becomes ritually impure. Okay. So mi de oraisa, a woman does not become tamea until she feels the blood coming out. And that feeling we term a hargasha. Okay. That's what we call it. Called a feeling or a sensation. Now, there are three types of sensation. This is a source that you do not have, so you'll have to listen very carefully. There are three types of sensation that are categorized or mentioned as being de'oraisa sensations. If you have one of these sensations, you are anida de'oraisa. Okay. These are found in the Rambam and one in the Noda B'Yehuda. And I'm reading right now from the Pitchei Tshuva in Shulchan Aruch Yoredeya. Siman Kuf Pei Gimel. It's the Pitchei Tshuva Sif Katan Aleph. This is the first Pitchei Tshuva on Hilchos Nida. Shetargish. It's on the word Shetargish in the Shulchan Aruch. Vida. And no. Dishlosha minei hargashot yesh. That there are three types of hargashot. Le'inyan shetehei tmea midoraita. In the... So that a woman may be ritually impure, midoraita, according to Torah law. Aleph, shenizdazea gufa, that her body shakes or trembles. Kmosha kasav Rambam, this is something that the Rambam has brought down. Bet, the second, sheniftach mekora, the feeling of the opening of the uterus. Azim kof bechet, etc. Vashlishit, and the third is nimtza beshuta achronim, is found in the responsa of the latter day halachic authorities. When she feels something wet, zav mimena bifnim, flowing inside her. So we're not talking about when you feel something sticky on your leg. We're talking about a feeling of a flow inside, from the uterus into the vagina. Now, that last one, he's now going to say, it is subject to some machloket. The first two, there's no machloket. The second one, the Chatam Sofer disagrees with that. But the Noda B'Yehuda brought it down, so it has a certain amount of weight. Okay, those are the three argashas d'oraita. So how serious is the prohibition of nida? So let's start out. What's the issue once a woman is in nida? That's on the third source here, Vayikra Perakaf Pasuk Yud Chet. if I could call upon someone, a volunteer, to read it with us. Come on, it's just me.
I'll read it.
He's in the shul, I think. Thank you. I'll pay you later. And the translation?
A man is in line with a woman in her affliction and has uncovered her nakedness. He will have bared the source, and she has bared the source of her blood. The two of them will be cut off from the midst of their people.
Okay. That sounds really her affliction. So basically the word that we're focusing on here is Vinichratu Shnehem Mikervamam. That's four words. The punishment for intercourse with a Nida is karet. So let's look at that. Kares means one of three things, depending who you ask. If you ask Tosfos, it means premature death. If you ask Rashi, it means death with no children. And if you ask the Rambam, it means just exactly as it sounds, being cut off. That's it. You die and there's nothing more. Either way, it's not a good thing. Okay? Let's get that carried, like a capital chaf there. Okay? It's bad. For example, other prohibitions which carry the punishment of karet are eating on Yom Kippur, being uncircumcised, eating chametz on Pesach, like the big things. Okay? Keeping Shabbos has a punishment of mitat beis din, which it's not fun to be killed, but it happens to be, on the scale of things, considered to be a lesser punishment. Keeping kosher is a lav. If you don't keep kosher, you get malchus, lashes. It's a very different scale. Okay? And Rambam, the Rambam, in the Perashat Mishnayos, Sanhedrin Perek Yud. In addition, it's interesting, I was discussing this with one of the rabbinim that I learned with, and I said, okay, so like, give me other things. What else is karis? So he says, oh, it's this and this and this, but this is worse. I said, what's worse? Karis is karis. He says, no, it's worse. Why? So I press him against the wall. I said, because listen, it involves two people, not one. And if something happens from that union, so then you have a sin, you have an isser that's being carried forward, right? It's different from if you eat once on Yom Kippur. It's between you and God, and you can do penance for it in one way or another. So obviously we believe that there's always a way to do tshuva. That's definitely not the topic of today's share, but it's something to think about. So, since it's so serious, what does that mean to us? What are we going to do about it? Let's look at the next page first. Page 2 at the top, Rambam, whose source I did not write in English. I just couldn't figure out what to call it, but I'm now titling it. This is from the Rambam's Hilchot Isurei Bia, the Laws of Forbidden Relations, Perek Tet, Halacha Aleph, and Beit. It doesn't have the English, so let's read it together. Ein ha'isha metam'a mina Torah. A woman has not become ritually impure from the Torah, Torah law, binida or beziva, in nida or in ziva, which is another topic for another time. More psukim that we're not going to look at, but there are two ways that that you can be ritually impure from a blood flow. One is nida, which is the normal menstrual cycle, and one is ziva, which is considered to be abnormal bleeding. Nowadays, as it comes down, those have been merged somewhat into one grand category. Everybody today who bleeds is considered a suffix zeva. Maybe she was a zeva, maybe she was a nida, we don't know. So we've amalgamated the halachos together, and that's part of what leads us to today's current practice. Okay, let's leave that aside for now. So the Rambam says, you cannot become tmeya as a nida or a zeva, until she feels v'tir'edam, and she sees blood v'yatza bivsara, and it comes out in her flesh, just like we said, v'tiyetmea, and she becomes impure, ritually impure, me'echetir'e ulehaba bilvad, from the time that she sees and forward. Meaning we don't assume maybe she saw it, maybe it came out, you know, 2 months ago or 2 hours ago, and she only saw it. Now we assume as soon as she sees it and forward. V'im lo yergisha, and if she didn't feel anything, uvadka umatzah hadam. And if she checks and she finds the blood lifnim ba prosdor, inside in the vagina, Then it has the assumption, it has a chazaka that it came with hargasha. We assume that it came with hargasha. Bet, umidivir sofrim, and the rabbis have added, divir sofrim would be a rabbinic enactment, shekol haro'ah ketem, whoever sees a stain of dam, of blood, al basara, on her body, or al bgadeha, or on her clothes, afal pisha lo regisha, even though she didn't feel it, she didn't have hargasha, ve'afal pisha badkatzma, and even though she checked herself, v'lo matza dam, and she didn't find blood inside. She just found the stain, and when she checked inside, there was no more evidence of it. It was just a spot. It wasn't a flow. Harei zot tme'a, this woman is ritually impure, u'ke'ilu matza dam lifnim bivsera, and it's as though she found blood inside in her flesh. V'tum'a zo b'safek, and this tum'a, this ritual impurity, is a doubt. It's because of a doubt. Shema ketemzen midam hachederba, because maybe this stain came from uterine blood. Okay? So because of the things that we were talking about, because it's an Isser Karet, we are machmir, and we include in the category of Anita also someone who finds a stain, even though it came without hargasha. Okay? Hargasha is definitely Deoraita. Somebody who finds blood without a hargasha is in the Durabanan category. We're going to go back to the first page and read the Shulchan Aruch. That is the Code of Jewish Law. That's what normative halacha is based, basically. Now, after that, we've added responsa, we've added opinions, but that's basically what we follow, is the Shulchan Aruch. In Siman Kuf Tzadi Sif Aleph, it says, Dvar Torah, according to Torah law, Ein ha'isha metama, the woman is not, either does not become impure or does not render anything impure. Velo asura lebala, and she's not forbidden to her husband, ad shetergish, excuse me, sheyatza dam mivsara, until she feels she has a hargasha that the blood has left her, has come out into her flesh. V'chachamim gazru, but our sages have decreed al ketem shenimtza begufa or bivgadea, on a stain which is found on her body or her clothes, shehitmea, that she is ritually impure, ve'asura lebala, and therefore forbidden to her husband. Afilu lo hirgisha, even though, and even if she did not feel it, she didn't have a hargasha, v'afilu badkatzma umatzat Torah, and even if she later checks herself and finds there's nothing else in there, that stain is enough to render her ritually impure. Okay? Because of the severity of the Isser, and because of the likelihood that, in fact, it was uterine blood, Chazal made a decree also on stains. Okay? What is the purpose of the rabbinic decree? Okay, so what are we getting at? What's the purpose? Generally, the purpose of a gezerah, of a rabbinic decree, is one of three things. So, number one, so that there's no confusion. For example, chicken is fleishik. Why? Because we wanted to have all meat being fleishik, so there's less confusion. Used chicken and turkey and fish were parv. Now we're left only with fish, which tastes very different and is not usually substituted in hamburgers, right? All the meats are considered fleishik, so there's less confusion. Two, to distance people from the actual transgression, so mukta. Okay, I don't want to turn on the car and start the engine, so I'm not even going to touch the car. Okay, that's preventing me from getting even. That's keeping me distanced from the actual transgression. It itself keeps me further.
The actual transgression
being lighting the fire. Right. Thank you. And the third reason is when there's some textual indication that a gezera is called for, that's called asmachta. There are two additional aspects of a gezera, which is enacted, okay? The first is lo plug. We say lo plug rabbanan. The rabbis didn't differentiate. So once a decree is enacted for X, it may be expanded to cover X plus 1. Even though X plus 1 in itself, if you looked at it, wouldn't be problematic. But we expand that decree to cover other situations. Okay? An example of that from Hilchot Nida is the 5-day minimum, depending if you're Sephardi, the 4 or 5-day minimum, which we say is we put in place whether or not the initial reason for it was... really don't want to get into that, but okay. The initial reason for it was... maybe the couple was intimate and then the woman is liable to discharge. Hi. The woman is liable to have a discharge for the next six onot, six periods of the semen, and that would interfere with her counting of her clean days. So we wait until that period is over, and we wait that period whether or not they actually were mishamesh the night before. Maybe he was out of town the past week, but we have that minimum 5 day, and we say, lo plug. I'm not going to ask you, maybe you did, maybe you didn't, what were you doing last week? That's the way the gezerah is, and it's established across the board. The second aspect is batel hatam, lo batel gezerah. Even though the reason has disappeared, has become irrelevant, or has passed, the gezerah stands. Right? Chazal established a gezerah, and perhaps 10 years down the road, 100 years down the road, the situation has changed drastically, right? But once a gezerah is enacted, it stays in effect, okay? Depending, of course, on what the situation is. Certain gezerahs were enacted for a specific situation, and some were enacted for a specific reason. So even though the reason is gone, we still continue to observe that gezerah. Okay, so that's the situation here. We're in a situation of a gezerah on a ketem, which is found. Now, the question is, what is the content and the extent of this gezerah of Chazal? Let's start. There are three things that we want to cover. The first is, this gezerah does not cover stains found on objects which cannot become ritually impure. We call that something that's she'eino mekabel tum'ah. The source for that, you will see, in the second source on page 2, Masechet Nida, Daf Nun Tet Amud Beis, and the Rashi on it. We're going to start. Oh, sure, we'll read the whole thing. We'll read it fast. Matnitin, the Mishnah. Hishila chalukah lenochrit. If she lent her shirt or her dress to a non-Jewish woman, olenida, or someone who's already a nida, harezo tolaba, and she finds a stain on it, then she may say, oh, it's probably when I lent it to Jacqueline last week, she got the stain on it. Sorry. Yeah, we're on page 2, second source. We're talking about a woman who has a reason to believe that the stain that she found was not hers. Okay, great. Gimel Nashim, three women, shelav shu chaluk echad, who wore the same shirt, or sheyashvu al safsal echad, or who had sat on the same bench, v'nimtza alav dam, and then when they got up, there was one blood spot there, one stain found, kulan tmeot, they're all tmeot, because we have no reason to pin it on one rather than the other. Okay, so all these three women, it's equally likely that it was from them. So great, so they're all tmeot. Yashvu al safsal shel evan, this is what we're more interested in, if they sat on a stone bench, o ala itzeba shel merchatz, or on the colonnade of a bathhouse, which Rashi says, right? They're sitting on something which is made of evan. The Rashi is here beside it. She'eino mekabel tumah. Right? If they sit on a bench which is not able to become ritually impure, and whereas the sefsal dereisha, the bench that we were talking at in the beginning, b'shel etz, dera'ui l'tameh b'moshav hazav anida, was a wooden bench which could become ritually impure. Right? Now we're talking about a stone bench. In that case, Rabbi Nechemya metaher. Rabbi Nechemya would say they're all ritually pure. Nothing happened. Shaya Rabbi Nechemya omer, because Rabbi Nechemya had a principle, kol davar she'eino mekabel tum'ah, anything which does not receive ritual impurity, eino mekabel ketamim, also is not susceptible to stains. If there is something which cannot become tameh, then it also does not affect you in terms of stains. So let's look at the run to understand a little bit more why. That's the next source. Unfortunately, I don't know where it's from. It must be on this Gemara, but I couldn't find the exact source of it. I apologize. Okay. And now, all of these things, we need to see. We have an hour, so we need to see what's really important to us. But please, go home and read the whole paragraph, okay? I'm like cutting off sentences. I'm not lying to you. I'm not making it up. But it's any time you take out the rest of the context, so you're missing something, okay? that I can't photocopy 20 pages every night, so this is what it is. I'm telling you what's relevant to us, okay? But there's lots more. Learn. Okay, Dekevan Demidoraita Einatmea, because since, according to Torah law, she's not ritually impure, she's not Tmea, Ela Behargasha, except if she has a Hargasha. Lo Gazur, Ela Bedevar HaMekabelma. They only made the gazir, they only enacted the decree on something which is able to become ritually impure, which is able to become tame. Aval v'davar she'eino mekabel tuma, but on an object which is not able to become ritually impure, lo, they didn't. V'hachi tama, and this is the reason. Mishum v'davar mekabel tuma, because regarding something which can become tame, kevan shema she'nimtza alav haketem tame, because the object upon which the stain is found is tame, Gazur bar Rabbanan. So the rabbis decreed also on the woman. Kadesh lo yavo l'tahera beged. So that we shouldn't mistakenly come to say, oh, well, the woman is ritually pure, therefore, so is the beged. But in fact, the beged is ritually impure because it has this blood on it, uterine blood on it. Aval, kshenim tzav devar she'eino mekabel tuma. But if it's found on something that is not able to receive tuma, lo gazur l'isha klal. They didn't make a decree on the woman at all. Now, a lot of the considerations have to do with taharos, with general tuma and tahara, not specifically nida. It used to be we had a Beis HaMikdash, and it used to be that had significance in terms of tuma and tahara had significance to us because when you're tahor, you can go into the mikdash; when you're tameh, you cannot. And when you're tahor, you can eat taharos, things that, for example, karbanos, right, and truma. And when you are tame, you could not. Nowadays, we don't have that. But there are two parts to Hilchos Nida. There's the Tuma and Tahara aspect, and there's the Isser Veheter aspect. The Isser Veheter we still have. Tuma and Tahara, whether the woman is ritually pure or ritually impure, is of less relevance to us than whether or not she is permitted or forbidden to her husband at that time. And that has not disappeared. So, in terms of ritual purity and impurity, nowadays, the only people who D'oraisa use a mikvah are women and gerim. A man could go to the mikvah 5 times a day and be very spiritual, but he'll never make a bracha on it until the Beis HaMikdash is rebuilt. Okay, getting back to that. So that's part of what the Ran is saying. That's where it came from. And because it affected the clothing, it would create an absurd situation where she's wearing a dress. The dress is tameh and she's not. It wouldn't. So once the dress is tameh, she's tameh as well. But if she's sitting on the ground, which is not Mekabel Tuma, or on this stone bench, which is not Mekabel Tuma, or any other example thereof. So then, in that case, she's not Tmeya either. Yes, no?
Yeah,
okay. You sure? Is this something that would be helpful to everybody else to clear up?
Well, I guess my question is, somebody's sitting on a bench that is Mekabel Tuma, but she's wearing a dress, on the bench and on her dress.
Okay, so if it's on her dress, you're right.
Okay.
So then, just stay on her dress. But they were, when he says Badka Karka Olam, that first source that we're saying, no, we're talking about she's sitting cross-legged on the ground. And they didn't have Victoria's Secret, and it was basically her
on the ground.
So, yes, absolutely. If it was on her dress and on the ground, then yes, the ground's not going to help. It's not going to help her. But if it was, then it's on something that is Mekabel Tuma. Okay, excellent. Confirmation, and that was absolutely b'makom. Okay, let's continue and say the second thing which defines for us the extent of the gezera is found on the bottom of page 2 in Nida Samach Alef Amud Beis and the Rashi on that. Okay, Tanu Rabbanan. Our rabbis taught, Beged Savua, a garment which is colored or dyed, Metame Mishum Ketem, becomes ritually impure through a stain, through a stain of a woman, uterine bleeding. Rabbi Natan Bar Yosef Omer, but Rabbi Natan Bar Yosef says, Eino Metame Mishum Ketem. It's not true. If a stain is found on a colored garment, it doesn't become ritually impure. Shelo Tiknu Bigdei Tziv Onin Le'isha, Ela Kelal Kitmehen, because the whole reason that dyed garments were ordained was in order to enable us to be lenient with ketamim. Okay? So the Gemara says, tiknu, what do you mean? It ordained you must wear colored garments? My tikninu, when did that happen? Ela shelo hutru bigdei tzivon in leisha, ela lakel al kitmehen. Rather, they were permitted in order to relax the law or in of ketamim, in order to be more, allow us to be more lenient in ketamim. Hutru, what do you mean? They were allowed. Michlal da asire? What, they were supposed to be asir? You weren't allowed to wear colored clothing? In, yes. Ditnan, as we learned, bepumus shel Aspusianus, at the time of the Vespasian invasion, Vespasius, gazru ala tarot chatanim v'ala irus, they prohibited the wearing of garlands by grooms and on the and the beating of drums at weddings. Bikshu l'gzura b'gdei tzivonim, and they wanted to decree also that we shouldn't wear colored clothing. It was too happy when all around them at the time of the, this was right around the time of the Chorban, and they felt it was inappropriate to be wearing colored clothing and to be in that celebratory mood. Amrei, but they said, ha adifa, it's better, kedei lakel al kitmehen, in order so that we can be lenient on ketamim. Lakel al kitmehen, let's look at the Rashi, that's the tiny little print here beside it. She'ena ketem nikarbo, that the stain is not recognized on it, kemar'eh dam gamur, as absolute unmistakable blood. Meaning Rashi is saying the reason that that colored garments are excluded from the gezerah is that you can't see. I mean, maybe it's red, maybe it's pink, maybe it's orange, maybe it's yellow, maybe it's green. I mean, I can't see it on that color. Okay. Now, initially, right, what would you think about that? You would think, okay, so then what if it's found on, you know, kind of a beigey color, and I can see very clearly, right? So then maybe it would be included in the gezerah of Chazal, right? If it's just a matter of whether or not I can see it properly, so there are some colors where it would be clear to me. So good. If you said that, you'd be right. That the Ramban in Perek Dalet says that absolutely, if the color is identifiable, she is Tmeya, and you have to prove to me. I'm sorry, I didn't bring that. I didn't bring the Ramban. That you have to sort of, you have to prove to me that it's not blood, in order to be excluded. However, we say otherwise. We say more like Rashi. And I think like the Rambam, who say that, no, all colors are excluded. And we're just going to look quickly at the Me'il Tzedakah. You know what? Let's read it straight in the English, because I want to get to a few more things, and I want to have some time for questions. But absolutely read the Hebrew. And even this, there's lots more, so look it up. Know, my son, that all the colors save from the stringencies of stains. And even though Rashi interprets there in the Talmud, which is what we just read, Rashi says that a colored garment saves is interpreted only because the stain is not recognizable on it as having the appearance of unmistakable blood. That's the Rashi that we just read. Even though Rashi says that, from which at first it seems that specifically red cloth would save, right? Because on red cloth you definitely can't see blood. But from what is said in another chapter, that Rashi interprets that really you can only use a white cloth to check the color of blood, then we can conclude that all colors save. It's only white on which blood is unmistakably recognizable. Any other color is enough to be lenient with for ketamim. And so it's brought explicitly in the Rambam and the Rashba, and that's the normative halacha that we follow. Now, the last thing that I want to look at, the last thing which is excluded, the last thing we want to look at together that is excluded from the Gezerah of Ketamim is found before we do that, let's just look at the Shulchan Aruch. That's the normative halacha today, and let's see what he says. Ketam shenimtza al davar sheino mekabel tumah, a stain which is found on something which is not mekabel tumah, not able to become ritually impure, lo gazru, they didn't decree on it. It's not even part of the decree. Ketzad, how so? But karkarka olam, so this is what we learned in the Gemara. If she checks a piece of ground, o kol davar, or any other thing, sheino mekabel tumah, which is not able to be tame, v'yashva alav, and she sits down, umatza bo ketem, and then she thereafter finds a stain, v'chen ketem shenimtza al beged tzavua, or if she found the stain on a colored garment, that's the second thing that we learned, Tehora, she's ritually pure. Therefore, the Ramah throws in, Lefichach, and therefore, Tilbash Aisha Bigdei Tziv Onin, a woman should wear colored clothing, Kedei Lahatzila Miktamim, in order to save her from the dinim of Ktamim. Okay, so this is not something your Kala teacher made up. This is the attitude of Chazal. This is what exists in Chazal, that it's true, we're very worried about Isser Kari. However, we balance that with limiting the extent of that gezerah. Okay? So the last thing that we want to look at together is found in Nida Nunchet Amud Bet, which is the second last source on page 3. So you know we're getting somewhere. And that is Matnitin, it's a Mishnah. V'tola b'chol davar she'yichola litlot. A woman may be tola. Tola means to hang. So she may hang her stain, meaning blame it on someone else, in any possible way that she can. Okay? Shachata behema chaya ve'of. If she slaughtered an animal, a domestic beast, a wild animal, or a bird, nitaska b'ktamim, or she was handling bloodstains, or she even sat beside somebody else who was dealing with blood. I don't know, she passed by the butcher. They talk about maybe she walked through the butcher in the marketplace. Okay, hargama cholet, if she's killed a louse, harezo tolava, then she can attribute the bloodstain to any of those cases. Ad kama, how much can she attribute to this? Meaning, how large of the stain can be attributed to a louse? Rabbi Chanina ben Antigonus Omer. Rabbi Chanina ben Antigonus says, "Ad kegris shelful, up to the size of a split bean." The afal pishalaraga, even though she didn't kill it, she didn't consciously kill a louse. She doesn't know. She didn't slap herself and say, "Oh yeah, that's what it is," and then see it later. She can assume a louse is of a gris, which is a kind of a bean. Okay, and it's about if it were circular, it would have a diameter of about 19 millimeters. It's larger than a shekel coin. It's smaller than a quarter. How about that? Larger than a dime, smaller than a quarter. And it does not. The shape is not relevant. Any shape, she can be tall. Okay. So, let's go. In that case, now the Ravid, the Re'em, and the Chavatat, whose source I could find but I don't have for you right now, says, listen. If it's unreasonable to be tole, to blame it on a louse, on a macholet, then she's tmeya, even if it's smaller than a gris. For example, the Ravid says, if she finds a black stain, then she's out of luck. Lice have red blood, they don't have black blood. So if she finds a black stain, she's out of luck. However, normative halacha is opposite, and you'll see in the Shulchan Aruch, which is the last source we're going to look at together, in Kuf Sadi, lo gazru al haketem, they did not decree on a stain, ela im ken yesh bo kegris ve'od, unless it is the size of approximately this bean plus a little more. So up to this bean, you're set. Okay, there's also machloket. Does that mean, let's say this is the bean. So if it's less than this bean, then I'm okay. But if it's the size of the bean, then I'm out of luck. Or is it up to and including the size of this bean, I'm okay. But if it's this bean and a little bit more, then that's already out. Okay, and that's how we paskin lekula, that as long as it's even up to the size of this bean, whatever it may be, as long as it's up to and including that size, so the woman is tehora. Okay, and that's on white. That's if she found it on white, right? If she found it on colored underwear, then I don't care what size it is, right? As long as it's spotting. I'm not talking about serious, having your period and pretending it doesn't exist, okay? So, to sum up, let's look at something that is further on in one of the sources. You don't have the rest of it, but it's the source that you have. It's Nida Nuntet Amud Aleph. Let me just read to you the rest of the sentence. Okay.